Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to my wonderful chat with Glyn Fussell, a.k.a. Glyn Fussell, as we've just agreed. He has swung by to talk about his amazing new book and many other things, including Mighty Hoopla and Sink the Pink, the queer institutions which he founded, and they are full of good, clean fun, let me tell you. If you haven't listened to part one, you've got to go back to the feed and listen to that first, because them's the rules.
Can I just tell you this, and I'm not just saying this, this was the podcast that got me into podcasts, your podcast.
No.
Yes. I feel like I finally ticked a massive thing off my list because I always wanted to come on. I'm the biggest fan of Homo Sapiens.
Oh, thanks. That's very sweet of you. I feel like we're both trying to do something, but in different ways. You've got Rave, I've got Radio 4. You know, it's like, it's a place where people can hang out and not feel, you know, and a response to, like, I don't want anyone to feel like what I did.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
But, you know, isn't the beauty is all of this is storytelling. All of it is creating space, right? Well, that's what we're doing, whether it's a podcast or whether it's an event or whether it's a book. But I think that we, as queer people, we have a responsibility to pass down our culture. Because, you know, we don't have a book that we read in a church. We don't have that.
Well, we do now.
Hello. I read the Bible. We'll call it Babel. Glyn Fussell's Babel.
Yeah. Where do I start?
But yeah, I think we have to keep speaking to other people and putting ourselves out there. You know, I sometimes just... When I was writing this book, I'm like, oh my God, what if nobody gives a shit? And actually, I thought, get over yourself. It's not about me, actually. I'm just carrying forward all the knowledge that great people that taught me. I was so lucky before I Sink the Pink that I had this amazing East London community around me, like Johnny Woo and John Sizzle owned the Glory in East London, and people like Lavinia Co-op before and Princess Julia. These people really taught me so much stuff, and I will have to continue to teach other people, and we have to do that for the next generation.
Yes, absolutely. And did you, because it's called A Manifesto for Misfits, and there isn't actually the word LGBT anywhere on the cover type thing, you know, like, was it important to you that it was broader than that, broader than queerness?
Yeah, because I think the DNA of all my work is way more labelless, even though I've always been put in these boxes. I think I've always been trying to do stuff that because I don't want to just write a book that you can only read. You can only read this if you are LGBTQ. I want this to be a book that my mum can read, which she has about 10 times, and reads me passages back. But also that you can I feel so proud of my community, of everything that we stand for. And I actually think that we've been force-fed a lot of straight information for a long time. And actually, it shouldn't be an exclusive club. Everything I've ever stood for, Sink the Pink, Mighty Hoopla, I think, I just have a zero bullshit, come in, and as long as you're not a prick, then let's all just humanize each other and speak to each other and hear each other's stories and come with empathy and love and understand difference.
Yeah, and also what I think is quite good about the book is that if you are that teenager who knows they are queer in some way.
Yeah.
I don't mind ordering that book and my parents seeing the cover. Like, whereas if it was like How to Be Gay or whatever,
yeah,
you know, like you, it's problematic. So it's like, it's quite a nice little Trojan
and
horse.
That was intentional. That was okay, because I kept thinking about myself when I was 13 and I was this Bjork fan and I was alternative before I was gay because that was easier because I found my misfit alliance in alternative music. And so I had all the kind of weird, you know, MySpace haircut kids that were my friends. We were all queer, but none of us were out. But what we all had was Bjork.
Yes.
And if we had a book like that that didn't exactly have I am gay, hello mum, then I thought that it's something that
mum,
we could...
Mum, please, can you tell
exactly,
Dad?
Exactly. We can all communicate a secret code, I guess.
And tell me about the first moment you thought you were different.
My first memory, I'm one of seven. And my mum was a child mind, very working class, small house. So it was carnage in my house. And I was very shy growing up, which no one will ever believe. Painfully shy. I felt very fragile growing up. And I always remember, as far back as I can remember, waking up every day and laying there for a minute and having to plan how I was just going to get through that day. And I was always... You know, there's a lot of stress and that's a lot to carry. And I had one safe space in my front room. And again, I put this in the book. And my mum used to have those dark brown long curtains with lining.
Yeah.
It was throwback to the 70s. And there was lining and I would hide in them. I thought no one could see me. All my family knew I was in there, but they just left me. And I would just sit in there for hours and hours and block everything out. And a lot of my imagination came from that. My mum said I would just literally climb in a cardboard box and sit there for hours.
Wow.
So yeah, I've always felt just like an alien, really, I guess.
And was there a sense of being overstimulated as well, like by your difference, so you sort of needed a time out of some description?
Not really. Look at the career that I've had and a lot of things I do now. And I think I was manifesting it inside those boxes and inside that curtain.
Really?
You know? Yeah, because I think that when you're queer and not able to live outwardly, you go inward and you romanticize, visualize, and your imagination. You know, I didn't grow up in a creative household, you know. However, I'm very creative and my imagination is ridiculous. And I think that comes from having a physical block in how I could live my life externally. Yeah. So I had to look inwards and create these kind of dystopian, I was just living in the clouds in a utopia. And so there's no coincidence that I've created these little pockets of queer utopia, I think.
Yeah, because you said a lovely thing, which was inside of me was a glorious show pony, but I didn't have the confidence to do it on the outside. And following on from that, the one thing that you said, I really want to ask you about, was you said, I've always thought of myself as more akin to being a lesbian. tell me what that means. I can't work out if that's you being playful or if it's like a real thing.
So first and foremost, I am from a family where women are power, you know. And I've surrounded myself all my life with unbelievably powerful, strong women. And I've always called myself a lesbian trapped in a queer man's body. I could get in trouble with this. A lot of certain things that I tried, you know, in my 20s and 30s, and they just do not work for me. And I've always been a little bit scared of overtly gay clubs, if I'm honest. You know what I mean by that? Very gay man only clubs, that kind of thing.
Oh, for me, they're terrifying.
Yeah,
it's too much, like...
And I'm a little bit, you know, a little bit... You know, I'm a serial monogamist. I meet someone, they live with me within 2 months. You know, I'll talk to lesbian friends. They're like, God, you're more lesbian than me, you know? And I'm like, thanks. Yeah, I'm good with that. I mean, but then also at the same time, I think women are power, you know, and I think maybe it's me just lusting over the lesbians, wanting to be a lesbian more than anything.
When you say you tried things in your 20s, but they didn't work.
When I was in my 20s, you know, I was always just one night stands and trying to be like that gay guy in the club.
And
trying out all those scenes, and it just didn't, it's just not for me. And also, by the way, if it is for you, great. Didn't come down. I just couldn't. I think I'm too, like, I find it very hard to disconnect emotionally. You know what I mean? I find it very hard to disconnect emotionally when I'm having sex.
Yeah. Well, this is sort of links to the whole thing, which is that, like, within your own, you know, you find your gang, but actually within your gang, you can be a misfit. But, and so many gay men feel like that. I don't need to be this topless alpha version of a male in order to be a good gay man. I was so like you. Like, I just wanted to fall in love, you know, and like cuddle. And
you found that.
I did find it. Boy, did I kiss a lot of frogs, though.
I mean, I went further than just kissing the frogs. I got the whole damn swamp. And there was a lot of frog spawn.
Yeah, it was everywhere. I think, for me, you know, I always have to put for me on the end, like, mixed is my favourite. A mix of every gender identity, every da-da-da.
Yeah.
Like, I think all one is, in anything, I think is just the best.
That's why Sing the Pink was born. You know, that was exactly the catalyst and why it worked as well, I think. It was, the thing about Sing the Pink, which was so great, beginning to the very end, was that it was never overtly sexual. It was playful. It was, it was like a school disco, but you got to do it on your own. It was like a big queer prom. Really?
Yeah.
Because back in the beginning, you know, we got paid in drinks tickets at the beginning. No lie.
Wow.
And so we just, to our friends, you can be on the door, you can DJ, you know. And so we just did it all ourselves, because essentially we're just doing it for ourselves at the beginning.
Yes, that's how it started. And then it became this huge thing with, like, you know, what would you say was your biggest gig? I mean, there were tons. Brixton Academy?
I say our biggest actually was our final one. We did Printworks, which is, I think, 6,000, and we sold it out in 8 minutes. Final.
Wow.
There's not many club nights that go for that long, nearly 15 years. And we were more in demand on that final one than we'd ever been. But we've done some crazy stuff. We played Times Square. You know, we've been on Graham Norton. We did Sao Paulo Pride, through the streets, 4 million people. I mean, it's actually mental. And when something finishes, the beautiful thing is you get to look at it and feel a real immense sense of pride, because you're not in it and you're not thinking, we've got to do more. It's a time for reflection. And I got to do all of that with people that will be my friends forever. And so that's, God, I sound like Jerry Halliwell, don't I, in Spice Girls? Look how that worked out.
And why did it finish?
Because many reasons. I would say that it's a different time now. I think that my job felt very much for a long time that I had to always be a couple of steps ahead and sensing what was happening. And because when you're in it, you're just going, this is amazing. We're performing on stage. We're doing this and I'm getting paid. There's, you know, opportunities. But I could see stuff was changing, and there's lots of great Sing the Pink inspired nights out in London now. So I think sometimes,
because it was early to be, because Sing the Pink was essentially bringing drag to club nights, right? Which obviously wasn't.
But also it was this like labelless night that was more like a house party, and there was no rules, and it was themed and silly, very silly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And surreal at times. I think the best ever review we ever got was from, I don't know, someone that was great. And they said that Sing the Pink is like walking into John Waters' brain.
Oh, wow.
And I almost stopped then. Like, we've done it. Like, that's it. We've done it.
Yeah, it's very true, actually.
And I think that, you know, there's that little TV show that's happening with that. She's going to be big. RuPaul, I think her name is. But all of a sudden, you know, we've got this scene that we were all on a level, we were all in it together. And now, and that show is amazing, amazing, mm-hmm. what it's done for queer people. But it is a show, and it affects the way that the club scene is. And Chris, mm-hmm. I was 27 when I started, I'm 42 now. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of other things. And I think you have to just, when all those things come together, you go, God, what a run. Like, what a legacy. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're still really in demand. And there's been nights in the past that fizzle. And I thought, mm-hmm. we should go out. I owe it to the legacy of that night and everyone that loves it, that it goes out on our terms, in our way, at its absolute mm-hmm. peak. And people remember it how they should remember it, which is, I don't know, something that's had an impact on people. And that was my responsibility, really, to keep what it stands for in the way that people remember it.
Well, hopefully there'll be a little comeback in a bit, because maybe that'll be the inverted loop. You bring people back for the Mighty Hoopla, then someone's going to have to try and bring you back. Glyn is pulling a series of faces, just so everybody knows. There's a series of faces being pulled.
What could they mean?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Just to summarise a bit more on the book, what I love about it is the way it's laid out. It's really colourful. It's got a sort of colourful Henry Holland vibe. Would that be fair to say?
I love Henry. That's a great compliment.
In your face. It's really engaging. And it's just got lovely, all different things of how to be a misfit and how to find your dream and create your happy place. And then you've got all these little phone of friends throughout it where you phone people like, is it Mel C? Is Mel one of the phone
calls? Mel C's in it, yeah.
Mel C. And then we've got cameos from people like Skim from Skunk and Nancy, Jade Thirlwall from Little Mix. You may have heard of them. And all these lovely little sort of titles that sum up so much, like Find Your Tribe, Take a Step to Understand Yourself, and Safe Spaces, all these things that it's just lovely how you've brought it all together.
Thank you.
All these things that we all know that we have learned through our queer journey. One thing I didn't expect to see coming up was Marie Kondo to make a cameo.
Wow.
Tell me about how Marie Kondo ended up here, because actually I'm fascinated by the concept of self-sabotage, which is the link.
I just got a bit obsessed. But the thing is, I wrote this book in pandemic,
yeah,
whilst we were all sorting our lives and sorting our houses, but also at the same time sabotaging our lives. I don't know about you, mm-hmm. but God, I mean, I almost don't want to say the P word because it was so traumatic for me. And I just, this book therapized me in many ways. Like, my habits changed. I watched a lot of, I tell you one thing I did, I started therapy in the pandemic, which really got me through and started really decluttering my life, decluttering mm-hmm. my brain, mm-hmm. opening up my file of facts of trauma. And ooh. Yeah, and really, I and it was the first time it just coincidentally ran alongside writing a book that I look back to look forward almost. Mm-hmm, because I think the world stopped, which was wonderful, but I've never stopped. And I think also I run events. That's what I do as a job. And that obviously, as you can imagine, the pandemic was somewhat tricksy. So there was a fear for me.
Terrifying.
There was a fear for me that everything I ever done might never come back. And I went on a mad, I just went through mad spending sprees of buying things like canoes. I bought two canoes.
When you literally weren't allowed outdoors to use it.
Yeah, great. Exactly. I bought canoes. I bought a keyboard, still in the box. And then I would go on mad, like, OCD cleaning rants, you know.
Interesting.
So, yeah, there's a lot of things in the pandemic, though. I felt in a weirdest way I was in, like, a sort of social experiment of myself, you know, the Big Brother house of my own brain and my own past.
Wow.
But I came out the other side. I put a lot of it in the book. Because I think that anyone that writes a book where they're giving advice, like, if you're not doing it through lived experience, or you're only doing it, I should say, through your own lived experience, it's a bit holier than thou. So I did a lot of seeking advice from other people that were sort of experts in certain stuff, you know? And that's where that whole phone a friend thing comes in.
Lovely.
Because I really, in the pandemic, I don't know about you, but it was so, if I didn't have those people at the end of the phone, I would have lost my mind, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I need to get better at meltdowns because I very much internalize them. So I was having a meltdown, but I would just keep it all within. I wasn't really calling anyone. I was calling everyone. I sort of go into like mode of trying to check everyone else is okay. And then I realize I've behaved really strangely for 3 months. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's always like afterwards, I'm like, what the fuck?
I think actually it was the first time I broke myself down properly and then had the time to really pick it all back together.
Mm-hmm.
And face all the stuff of why I did that and where it came from, put it back together. And as much as it was a really horrendous, horrendous time, I've come out the other side of it in a way more balanced place, I would say.
And tell me, is there a link there with one of the things you say in the book, which I think is something that's really helped me, is that, you know, allowing yourself, when it comes to mental health, like allowing yourself to be vulnerable is the greatest gift you can give yourself.
I think I come from an environment that I didn't have the luxury to allow myself to be vulnerable. I had to get a very thick skin, and I've been running very fast uphill with scissors all my life. And I think... juggling the scissors as well, may I add.
With heels on.
Always with heels in a jockstrap, balancing an egg in my anus. but I have grown so much because I am allowing myself to be very vulnerable. And it's been quite the breath of fresh air. And I'm for the first time ever, I'm always very honest with others, but I'm not very honest with myself. And I'm learning to be very honest with myself and then communicating how I feel. And it's just improved every aspect of my life.
Wow, I love that. I love that. Well, listen, thanks for doing it. And thanks for putting it all in the book, because then other people aren't going to have to run up hills with scissors, you know. And
they should do the hills. You should always wear heels while walking up a hill.
The book is called Sink the Pinks, Manifesto for Misfits. Be different, be free, be you. The foreword is by Lily Allen. We didn't even get onto her. One of my favourite people on earth. Glyn, thank you so much for your time.
Chris, this was so lovely. And I can tick Homo sapiens off my bucket list.
Oh, well, we aim to please. Now, listeners, if you want to get in touch about Glyn's book or anything, in fact, at Homo Sapiens on Instagram, it's at Homo Sapiens Podcast on Facebook, and it's hello at Homo Sapiens Podcast for Agony Uncles. Send us your Agony Uncles. I could have answered some with Glyn. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for joining me, Glyn. This has been wonderful being my co-pilot. Best of luck with the book, and please let this not be the last time you chat to us.
Oh, I would love to come back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.